Welcome to episode number 362 of the Hot Nerd Podcast. We are continuing on with our What Now action-oriented miniseries, and today we're unpacking Learning is Vital. You guessed it, What Now? Welcome to another episode of the Hop Nerd Podcast. I am your host, Sam Goodman, the Hop Nerd LLC. Make sure you head over to the website, www.thehopnerd.com, for fundamentals, learning teams, support, and so much more. Send us an email, thehopnerd@gmail.com, and be sure to follow along with us on all things social media at the Hop Nerd or at Sam Goodman. Welcome to today's episode. I don't know why I do that. This music just kind of pumps me up. I hope that it amps you up too. We changed that, a couple years ago now from the original Hop Nerd Podcast music to this when we did a little bit of a revamp. There's that we thing again. When I did a bit of a revamp here on the sound of the show, and I don't know, just updating and stuff. Do you like it? Do you love it? You got to have more of it. I do. I always go back and forth with maybe changing it again or maybe going retro with the old school music since we are here on episode number 362. Yeah, it's the episode number 362 of the Hop Nerd Podcast. And speaking of liking it, loving it, and just gotta have more of it, those are Cold Stone Creamery adjacent references, by the way, sizes. I think theirs is like it, love it, gotta have it. And maybe that would fit in better here for our action-oriented mini-series here on the Hop Nerd Podcast that we are calling What Now? Today being Learning is Vital. What now? What the heck do we actually do? If you haven't listened to the other episodes, make sure you go back and do that. And before we dive into today's action-oriented miniseries episode, do me a favor. Head over to thehopnerd.com/SP and check out Starting Points, Operationally Curious Questions, the original Operationally Curious card deck. We've got card decks, learning journals, and you can explore customization options through licensing of Starting Points and join the ever-growing list of organizations that are doing just that, licensing these card decks, these questions, and printing their own card decks or embedding these things into their digital systems, into their pre- and post-event learning somethings. Yeah, we can help you with that all over at thehopnerd.com/SP. SP as in Starting Points. And that lines right up with like it, love it, gotta have it, or gotta have it and gotta have more of it. Because I hear from organizations constantly, the hundreds of organizations that are currently using Starting Points around the world and throughout really diverse and interesting industries. They're in use in places like mining and oil and gas and power generation and healthcare and all over the map in manufacturing, like people making stuff. You kind of dream it up and people are like, yeah, we're using it here. And we keep hearing constantly that you like it, you love it, you got to have more of it. Whether these folks are using our original card decks, the ones that you can just go online and order, and the more you order, the better deal you get because of the volume discount thing and all that stuff through the printing service that we use, or you go on Amazon and you're using the learning journals because you like those questions, but you want to be able to capture some notes with those. And again, more and more and more and more organizations are licensing these so they can customize these and put their logos on them and tweak and tune those questions to better align with their specific operations while remaining broad and open and learning focused questions, or developing new novel questions that are very specific to their organization or based on their organization specific focused learning areas or goals. So really, really cool stuff happening with Starting Points. It is the handy dandy useful tool designed to help you bake operational curiosity, learning, improvement, and innovation right there into the day-to-day of your organization with no forms, with no check sheets, with no app rollout, with no need for a bunch of big wonky training. So yeah, that's like it, love it, gotta have it. That's why they were born, to help us make operational curiosity, learning, and improvement with those nearest to the work, whatever that work may be, just a part of our normal day instead of being some abnormal something that we only go do when we get a really big loud signal that things have gone wrong, when something has burned down, when something has broken down, or when we just see a very, very clear need to say, oh my God, I think we need to learn something here. Nope. The starting points helps you make that the norm of your organization, the day-to-day of your organization. A couple final things here. If you need a hand on your human and organizational performance journey. Ding, 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 ding. I'm that person to help you. Yep. Wait a second. Let's do this. Let's throw in that cool. Yeah. Now, that's what I'm talking about. I have to tell you that it took me like a solid 20 minutes to find that stupid it's called a DJ horn. I kept looking like rave horn, party horn, EDM horn. I kept getting like the, you know, the little paper horn. They go, like I kept finding those, and it was a nightmare. But I became obsessed with it, and I went down the rabbit hole of finding the magic of podcasts. But speaking of being obsessed, I'm obsessed with helping organizations be successful with human and organizational performance, with this doing things differently stuff. So if you need a hand, sincerely, I would love to be that partner with you, helping your organization begin or go farther with these concepts. I help organizations of all different shapes and sizes and across industries and around the globe with stuff like teaching them human and organizational performance, human and organizational performance fundamentals, if you will, to deep dives, to teaching them how to do learning teams and operational learning, curiosity, improvement, and innovation, to things like planning and coaching and ongoing support. I help in all kinds of different ways because that help is always customized to your specific organization based on where you are at right now and helping you go where you want to go. Yeah, so sometimes it looks like, hey, we're on this hot journey. We've been doing this for a little bit. We need some support. We need somebody to come in that really knows this stuff and spend time with their safety teams teaching them about human and organizational performance. We're looking for that deep dive, followed by that, air quotes here, fireside chat where we hang out and we talk through this stuff. We want to work on strategy. We want to work on the what now, on that part, the part that I specialize in. How do we bring this stuff to life? Sometimes that looks like, hey, we want you to help us be the sounding board for new ideas and things that we're doing with our organization. And we want to do that on an ongoing basis. Hey, I'm this safety leader, this hop leader in an organization, and I just need somebody to tell me I'm not crazy or to tell me that I'm crazy sometimes. Can you be that person? Absolutely. That looks like follow-up support and coaching and all kinds of stuff to facilitating operational learning in various forms, from pre-event and post-event learning teams to learning reviews to helping people get started with better questions and develop their very own internal better question guides, you know, all more operationally curious, learning-focused questions, that kind of stuff. You get the point. You get the point. I do keynotes and special events, strategy planning, workshops, facilitation, coaching, and on. If you need a hand, thehopnerd@gmail.com. And if you want to explore more, maybe you're new here and you're like, who the heck is this crazy lunatic? Go follow me on LinkedIn. Check out everything that I've got going on. Go over to the website. Check out everything that I've got going on. Click that little handy book and initial consult button. That's a fancy way of saying, hey, let's hang out on Zoom for a little bit and talk about this stuff. It's super easy. You can just go do that. Book it at your convenience or just drop me a line. Yeah, thehopnerd@gmail.com. I'm planning out the rest of my 2025, and I would love to come help you. With all of that out of the way, let's jump into today's episode. Well, welcome back. Glad to have you here for episode number 4 of our What Now miniseries. Today we're exploring learning is vital. What now? We're going to unpack in the normal way that we've unpacked this with the last 3 episodes. We're going to talk through a bit of what that means. Hopefully we'll throw in some story time somewhere there in between and in the middle. And we're going to end this thing with some solid actions that you can go try on for size, that you can micro experiment and tweak and tune and make better, giving you some starting points for ideas within your organization. That's the entire intent here. Theory into practice, ideas into actions. We want to make sure that we unpack and debunk and demystify a lot of the maybe misconceptions about some of these things early on in the episode. And speaking of which, if you've listened to the past few And if you haven't, go back and listen to them. I think they kind of don't suck. I think you're going to find some really useful stuff packed in there. But if you've been around for those first few, you know what's going to happen right about now. Disclaimer, 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 disclaimer. Yeah, it's disclaimer time. So, quick heads up. Before we get started, I don't know you, and I don't know your organization. Now, with that being said, I do know many of you, and I've spent time in a lot of your organizations. I've spent time working internal to organizations myself. Like, the vast majority of my time on planet Earth working a career has not been consultant. I was not shat out a consultant. That's not how this happened. And many of the ideas that we're going to talk about, many of the concepts and these actions that we're going to talk about come from maybe your organization or from experiences that I've had with other organizations, or a lot of them come from experiences that I've had working internal to organizations. You know, where the ideas that we come up with, we actually have to live with said ideas. I don't get to seagull consultant in, where I fly in, shit all over everything, and then leave, give you a bunch of bad advice, and then say, bye, have fun. It's born from that. But back to the main point of our disclaimer, I don't know you, and I don't know your organization. The ideas and stories that I share here are based on my experiences or experiences that we have shared together, working together. These are things that I have seen work elsewhere. They aren't specific advice for you and your organization and your organization's very, 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 very unique reality, your very unique situation, your specific context. The other thing that we say here, there are no silver bullets. There are no secret handshakes. You can't just like wiggity wiggity wiggity, like slap hands and wiggle fingers together and like spit in your palm and then high five and then like chest bump. Like most of us, I think we belly bump. I do. I belly bump more than a chest bump these days, but that doesn't happen. And this stuff, it doesn't work that way. And anybody that tells you that they're going to come in and give you a canned checklist of something, they're lying to you. They're lying to you. Void the check now, because they are lying to you. Don't take what I'm about to tell you and turn it into a checklist and say, this is what Sam said, so it has to work. No, use your noggin. Yeah, take stuff that sounds good. Leave stuff that sounds like crap. Be open-minded. Give things a shot. Start small. Tweak, tune, adjust. Hey, that worked great. I'm going to try that. Tweak, tune, adjust. That sucked. Tweak, tune, adjust more. Yeah, the disclaimer is here. The last thing with our bit of a disclaimer here is this. No matter what I say, I might have experiences with something that's absolute hot trash, in my opinion. I'm the very last person on planet Earth that is going to tell you to stop doing something if it is working well for you. Yeah, it's hard to argue with, hey, this works good. If I say, that thing is stupid, I don't know why, and it might be overall stupid, but you are the anomaly and it works well for you, don't stop doing it. Which leads us into maybe our final point here with our disclaimer. I keep saying I'm going to make this shorter, and I think it keeps getting longer. But don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Start small, micro-experiment, check, adjust, tweak, tune over time. Yeah, those two go hand in hand. Yeah, of course. Of course, don't like go gut everything. Pick a safe place to start with some of this stuff. Take some of these ideas, and many of them are very, very, very safe ideas. Doing this doesn't mean you have to stop doing that if that is working well for you. Disclaimer, done. Boom, check, got it. Let's jump into learning is vital. What now? Okay, learning is vital. Now what? And I think we start probably with now why. Learning is absolutely vital to us. It is mission critical to our organizations because our workplaces are complex and often complicated. They're messy. They're dynamic. They're constantly changing. People are adapting and figuring things out in real time, on the fly, creating success along the way. They're making trade-offs and dealing with pressures. We all are in our roles, fixing things on the fly, putting out fires. Work as imagined by folks writing the processes in our procedures is hardly ever, truly, if ever, never, is never. It's never work as done by the folks actually doing the work. And if we're not actively learning about that, I'm going to call it a gap. Gap sounds bad in our world. I don't think that gap is necessarily all that bad. Oh, God, people are going to get mad at me. I find it quite amazing that people figure it out and almost always figure it out successfully. I use the driving on the highway example a ton, and you probably do too. Are you ever driving down the road and you're like, my God, like, especially here in Phoenix, and if you live in a large metropolitan area such as Phoenix, where traffic is constantly getting worse and worse and worse and worse, my God, I want to complain about it so bad, but I'm not going to. You might have this thought too. I was just driving this morning back from the airport, and I'm sitting there kind of in this massive flow of traffic going, it's amazing to me that more people don't wreck. Truly. I don't know the number here, but I'm going to call it like a gazillion. There's like a gazillion people on I-10 between Phoenix Sky Harbor International Airport and my house on the far west side of the valley, way outside of the city, out into no man's land, out into the dirt and the cacti, into the saguaros. Most of that drive, almost all of it these days, is just bumper-to-bumper jam-packed. And in Phoenix, it's usually bumper-to-bumper jam-packed. You're either dead stopped or you're going 115. Yeah, it's wacky. It's wild. It gets weird. It feels dangerous because it is dangerous. And to me, it's just absolutely amazing that we all don't just wreck and die. It's a massive testament to how good we are as people at figuring things out. As to what we just said, figuring things out and mostly getting it right. Occasionally, we get it wrong. We'll bump into that car in front of us, or maybe worse, but we mostly get it right. So back to that idea of people figuring out that gap. We refer to gaps in our organizations usually as these big bad things. Gap equals bad. When I say that, I just feel the need to say I'm not saying that that's bad. A common misconception here when we talk black line, blue line, work is done versus work as imagined, and then learning about said work as done, work as imagined, operational reality versus operational fantasy in my more a bit pointed way of saying that, or eye-opening, eye-popping way of saying that. A lot of people want to misconstrue that as, yeah, I get this. This is just like compliance. I just got to beat people back onto that line, just back to following the rules and all will be well. And that's not true. As we've said, using our dumb road example, and it is dumb because this is the second time I've used it. It's just a good one. If I followed the rules, it would make things worse. Yeah, if I did that work as prescribed by the experts, by the planners of said work, the people that drafted the, I'm sure it's called something like the Uniform, Arizona Uniform Traffic Code, I'm sure is probably what it's called, it wouldn't work. My drive would not occur. And sometimes following those things would actually make my drive far worse, i.e. me dead on the side of I-10. Yeah, so don't view that gap as bad. Our job, when we think about learning is vital, this is maybe our first point here before we get into actions, is we're just looking for reality. We're just looking to learn. We're not looking to judge. We're not looking to say, go follow that line. We just want to understand. If we're zigging and zagging, and if we're zigging and zagging real far, I want to understand how it makes sense for us to zig and zag that far. Are we going beyond just kind of that basic flow of work adaptation to like I'm having to go to the extremes of our system? And maybe I'm creating interesting successes even, where I'm creating success where there maybe shouldn't be success, places where the organization is maybe actively supporting me and being not successful, not supporting me with the things that I need to create success. But damn it, I'm creating it anyways. Those are really interesting places to learn, not to beat people back onto the black line, but to learn, to understand, to work with those nearest to the work, to understand, improve, and innovate. So learning is absolutely required. In our situations, we can't afford not to learn. If we're not learning, we're not staying static. We're probably getting far, far worse. If we are not actively seeking to understand and discover problems that are happening, things maybe that haven't happened, failure that hasn't actually failed, but things that are happening, going wrong, maybe not failed, but failing. Man, we're going to have a bad day at some point in the real near future. Not only that, not only from maybe just this kind of safety and bad day kind of perspective, but let's just talk maybe like ops and innovation kind of perspective. I've been catching up with a lot of people in tech here lately and spending time with tech companies and working in some tech companies. And they have this really, 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 really deeply rooted belief of innovate or die. And I don't think they're all that wrong. Now, I don't know that it's that extreme. Like if I don't innovate every single second of every single day, then I'm going to, it may be in their world, but I think it applies to our world too. We cannot effectively innovate over time if we do not seek to understand operational reality, if we do not work with the people within our organization that understand those innovations. You can have as much strategery as you want. You can have as much vision as you want from up and away, up in that corporate tower. But without the folks on the ground that truly understand how work happens, where things are failing, where we're letting our customers down, where people are struggling with whatever it is that we're delivering, we're not innovating, and we will soon wither and die. A good example of this, without naming any names, I was working in a large food manufacturer not that long ago, and we were doing some learning teams, and we were a part of this learning team thing. We were doing some specific stuff, and we were also doing some really like broad, like tell me where we need to improve kind of things, because we were looking for starting points. We were asking better questions, using starting points, operationally curious questions. And we got to this question around like, hey, you know, what's something that you're seeing, but the organization is completely missing? It's kind of one of those questions. And this person, old timer in the room, kind of perked up and sat up in their chair. It was like, listen, back in the day when I first started here, we were like hot shit. We were a big deal. And don't get me wrong, we're a big company. We make tons of money. But how's that old song going? I'm not as good as I once was. We're not as good as we once were. You used to be able to go in every store and you would see our products everywhere. You would go down nearly every aisle and you would see one of our big five products. You would go into the checkout lines at a store and you would see our stuff plastered there. And half the time the boxes would be empty because we'd be sold out. Good times. Yeah, good time. That's a good time. That's a great company to work for, right? Everybody is reaping some major rewards when our organizations look like that. And this is not where I was expecting this conversation to go. Back to the power of up and out with learning and improving and all the things that we've talked about so far in our miniseries, being open-minded and seeking to understand and asking broad learning-focused questions, people allowing people, creating an environment and allowing people to tell you what they need to tell you rather than what they think you want to hear. Not where I was expecting this to go, but he continued. And he said something along the lines, but all that changed. All that changed. Our leadership team changed. They stopped listening to us as much as they used to. And over time, they got a ton of strategery going on. Strategic vision and thinking. And they decided that all of this stuff that helped us create success in the past, instead of building on that and innovating on that stuff, they took away the things that our customers really loved. And he was talking about specific flavors of products. Back to not thinking it was going to go here. He's like, hey, you can track it. As soon as we started deleting these recipes from our inventory, people started to say, yeah, they suck now. And he's like, I'm not going to lie. I think we kind of suck now. We churn out good stuff, but it's not great stuff. That's exactly the stuff that we want to hear in our organizations. This is the person that takes pride in their work. They love what they do. They took pride in walking in the grocery store, in your local major big box retailer, and seeing a product that they had their hands on the shelves, and people loving it. And now they're upset and they're disappointed that they walk in there and they're nowhere to be found. It's bare times now. Those are the things that I'm talking about that you will discover with operational learning. You won't just discover areas that, hey, we need to improve this process. Hey, we need to tweak and tune that. Of course you'll find that stuff. But you'll also find, hey, you're blind to the fact that we're kind of sucking right now. And here's some really great ideas on how to not suck. I talked to my neighbors about this and I asked them, why are you guys not buying what we're putting out anymore? And they're like, well, because you got rid of the thing that everybody loved. And we can undo that. We have to be learning to innovate effectively. Another piece of this, and I share this with leaders all the time, is that there's not much that you need as a leader. There wasn't much that I needed as a leader other than really, 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 really good information. Because with good information, I can make sound. I can make good, I can sometimes even make great operational decisions. But without that information about the fact that our flavors suck, or about the fact that that thing eats fingers, or about the fact that that workflow gets stuck and we just figure it out and we make do with it. And yeah, it turns the spreadsheet green because we're figuring it out, but we're pouring tons of extra man hours onto that thing to make that actually happen. And we're pulling it away from this thing over here, which is eventually going to break. Without all of that stuff, how do I know where to direct resources effectively? I don't. How do I know what I need to support in getting fixed or improving? How do I know where we need to innovate? I don't really know. I'm just guessing. And they might be educated and best guesses, but it's still just guessing. And I don't know about you, but I don't like guessing, especially in a leadership role in an organization. If you gain access to all of that operational information, you get to stop guessing. You don't have to guess nearly as much, at least. So, I mean, we could go on and on and on and on and on and on. And we even baked in a little bit of story time there that really touched on a couple really great things about the power of operational learning and going out and learning deliberately, and how going up and out will take you far, far away from just like safety stuff, because none of what we're talking about is safety stuff. It's like how we learn and improve and innovate over time kind of stuff. And that's applicable to everything within our organizations. But we could go on and on and on and on and on and talk about the importance of learning within our organizations. Maybe the thing to talk about here is what it looks like when we're not learning. Are you looking for a handy dandy, easy peasy, lemon squeezy kind of way to get conversations flowing around operational reality within your organization? These conversations around work is done versus work is imagined, pain points, problems, even best practices, the good stuff, the great stuff. Well, Starting Points is exactly what you're looking for. Starting Points, the original operationally curious card deck, packed full of a ton of learning focused, operationally curious icebreaker questions to get those conversations flowing, helping your organization to effectively learn, improve, and innovate. Head over to thehopnerd.com/SP to download our free sample deck, to purchase the original card decks and learning journals, or to inquire about licensing options so that you can customize Starting Points with your brand, your logo, and your questions for your specific organization's needs. Again, that's thehopnerd.com/SP. Back to the show. So what's it look like when we're not learning? I will direct your attention backwards back to one of the other episodes where we're talking about my buddy Jason, the maintenance crew leader, and his finger in a styrofoam cup. If you haven't heard the story, you should go back and listen to story time. It's in the last one or the one before that. We talked about that, but that's kind of sort of what it looks like. I'll give you the short of the story here is that Jason was a maintenance mechanic, is a maintenance mechanic in an organization that I worked for quite a number of years. And Jason is a friend of mine. And during a pretty normal evolution of work where they were changing out belts with an appropriate lockout tag out, a flawless lockout tag out in place, safety friends, they were hand rotating some of these belts and pulleys, the assembly, while what they called rolling on a belt because they were having trouble with the equipment and the belt had to get on, and they rolled this belt into place, meaning that you put the belt on one pulley and you get a bite with the other pulley and it goes pop and it pulls it into place, and his glove became caught in said pulley and pinched off a sizable chunk of his left pointer finger into his glove. You can go back and the retelling of that story sucks. You can go back and listen to it. It's much better, I think, and the previous episodes. It might not be great, but it's better. It's better than that quick down and dirty there. But I tell you that so you don't have to stop here and go back and listen to that before any of this makes sense. But the point that I'm driving towards is that's exactly what it looks like when an organization is not learning. And let me go a little bit deeper than that, because a huge part of this story of how Jason's finger ended up in a styrofoam cup was because the organization chose not to learn. There were tons of signals, and that may be a harsh way of saying it. I probably need to say it like that. They probably had tons of good reasons for not learning, maybe, but they didn't learn. And what I mean is this. Jason and his crew had been experiencing trouble with this particular piece of equipment for years, upon years. A quick, like, going back through the old event logs from, like, the 80s discovered that there was a really similar event that occurred on this exact piece of equipment. Years and years and years and years, decades prior to this, that there were tons of near misses associated with this particular event in this particular type of injury. And Jason and his crew in recent years had submitted work orders for this piece of equipment. Jason and his crew had brought this up during safety meetings. Jason and his crew had experienced near misses themselves, reported near misses with this particular equipment. And when all of these kind of signals made it to the organization kind of kicked that can down the road instead of saying, hey, there's whispers here that this could probably go much, much worse than it has gone in the past. This seems like something that is going wrong. Maybe we should go investigate how people are normally successful with this, because they're almost always successful with this. Maybe we should go spend time with Jason and his crew or people that do this work and really seek to understand what's going on here. Because what it sounded like is this. The piece of equipment was a nightmare. The thing was eating belt. And what I mean by that is that belts on this piece of equipment should last for, like a year, I think is what the owner manufacturer specs for this piece of equipment said. And they're lasting maybe like a week and a half, 2 weeks. So they're changing these things constantly. And they were doing everything in their power to make it stop eating belts. They were checking it constantly, doing like the operator walk around staring at it. They were adjusting tensions, more tension, less tension, move this pulley this way, move this pulley, and nothing would work. And so they found themselves with this critical piece of equipment, a piece of equipment that had to stay operational or this facility would not be operational for much longer. They found themselves in a position of creating these workarounds to where like, hey, bolts are broken. You can't get this thing off here. The easiest way to get the belt on is do the roll-on method. Yeah, get a bite over here, like seat it really good on this pulley, get a bite with this other pulley, and then kind of like slowly twist it, rotate it, and then pop, it's in place. It's not perfect, but it works. It gets the plant back operational. We don't lose that vitally needed time, and it's going to eat the belt anyways. So if I damage the belt a little bit putting it on, or if the tension's not just perfect, it doesn't matter. This thing's going to eat a belt in a week's time anyway. So what does it matter if I get a week and 4 days out of it? It doesn't. So we've got to get this thing done. So this fell on deaf ears. And it mostly fell on deaf ears because the reports, the spreadsheets, the red, yellow, and green boxes were always green. Plant's always up. It's within that little goal that we set. The plant's available 98% of the time. That 2% is expected. Those are, you know, the belt change outs. Those are the, that thing broke down. That's the, we got to pull that thing down to service that thing real quick. It stayed green. Everything looked great from above. Even when we were getting those whispers of failure in motion, the this thing's eating belts. Hey, it almost cut my hand the other day. Back in 1982, it actually like cut off a couple fingers on a dude. Hey, we're spending like quadruple our belt budget for the year. Yeah, but it's green, it's fine. Yeah, that. If we're not deliberately learning about these things, it looks like that. Yeah, we're essentially waiting for somebody like Jason, an awesome, kick-ass maintenance employee with tons of experience, somebody that you know, somebody that's your friend, to one day darken your office doorway holding their styrofoam cup covered in blood with their left pointer finger inside of it packed on ice, asking if you can take them to the hospital. That's what that looks like. It's manifest in other ways. If we're not learning, a lot of times I see that we move down our blame, shame, retrain, more of the same hamster wheel of mediocrity within our organizations. We're not learning. At the very least, we're not learning deep enough. Because if we learned beyond maybe that like surface level of like, hey, you know, back to Jason. Jason put his hand in that thing. He shouldn't put his hand in that thing. Well, since Jason shouldn't have put his hand in that thing, and he did put his hand in that thing, let's blame him, shame him, retrain him. Actually, let's fire him. You know, cutting off his finger wasn't consequence enough. We need to embarrass him and make him unemployed as well. So simple. Jason's the problem. It's definitely not that piece of equipment that's been a nightmare for the past 30 years that's cut off fingers in the past. It's definitely not the fact that it's just eating belts and we're having to do this thing constantly. It's definitely not that. It's probably Jason. Yeah, that's what not learning looks like. It looks like repeat events. A lot of them. The same similar stuff just kind of happening regularly. It looks like safety investigations that end with retrain the worker or blame the worker or shame the worker or it's Jason's fault, just fire Jason, or things that end with, well, just add a step to the procedure or add another tick box on the pre-job brief or let's roll out a new focused observation card. Ooh, I've got it. Let's write another rule that says don't cut off your fingers. Yeah, sorry. Now that I've discovered the DJ horn, I'm going to use it just to let you know. But that's what it looks like. If we're not learning or we're not learning deep enough, at the very least, about operational reality, it looks like blame Jason because his finger ended up in a cup because Jason knew not to put his hand in that thing. And he put his hand in that thing, so it's Jason's fault, even though Jason has worked this job for years and almost always got it right, and we have set him up for failure, and he has mostly created success, even though we have set him up for failure. We're just not curious enough to go dig into that can of worms, so we'll just shit can Jason's fault. It looks like blame, shame, retrain, and more of the same. Maybe more of the same harder and more aggressively with more oomph behind it, but just more of the same, hoping for a different result. What I'm telling you is that organizations that aren't being very deliberate about learning, organizations that aren't constantly and deliberately seeking to understand the lived operational reality that exists throughout their organizations, it's a bad time. It's a real bad time. It's like some of the worst times. Learning, a real operational learning, it drives improvement and innovation within our organizations. It's how we understand how work actually gets done, almost always successfully, I might add, in the day in and day out, despite the challenges. It helps us understand where we need to focus on improvement. It also helps us discover areas where our employees are kicking ass and creating innovation that we might have been blind to in the past, but we can now see. They're like, wait a second, this isn't working for you, and you're kicking ass, and you've created something really cool here. It helps us discover the good and the great. It helps us discover the weird and the strange. It helps us discover the bad and the ugly within our organizations and actually do something with that instead of just waiting for another finger in a styrofoam cup. So we agree. I think we all agree that learning is pretty stinking vital, and it's something that we have to be deliberate about as organizations. It is a deliberate choice. It is something that we must choose to go do. But the hard part, the important part, the part that separates the organizations that just talk about HOP and operational curiosity and learning and improvement, and the ones that actually live it, the ones that kick ass with it, the what now part, is this. How do we make learning a fundamental, ongoing, normal part of our work? All right, we're at the action part of our discussion. Here we go. Action numero uno. Don't only change how you think about investigating failure, but actually change how you investigate failure. Seriously. Stop just going out and hunting for that like one cause. Stop going out and hunting for that guilty person. Stop going out and looking for Jason messed up. And if Jason would have just never put his hand in that thing in the first place, then this would have never have. Stop that. Stop that. Start facilitating learning reviews and learning teams. Focus on understanding the context, the conditions, that long list of factors. And ask, as we've said in previous episodes, how did this make sense to Jason? Because it totally made sense to Jason up until it suddenly didn't make sense to Jason anymore, up until he was holding his finger in said styrofoam. How did it make sense? Because it totally did. It at least made enough sense for people to proceed. They definitely didn't think the next thing is like, I'm going to die. They definitely didn't think, Jason didn't think, I can't wait to put my finger in this styrofoam cup. I can't wait to pour my now amputated and really squeezed off, pinched off piece of my finger from my glove or it remained after he had initially squeezed it off, into my coffee cup and then walk back to the break area, pack it on ice, and then go to the hospital for the rest of the night. That's definitely not what Jason thought. It made sense, at least enough sense, to move forward. We have to move from asking who failed, why did they do that stupid thing, to what failed, and how did this make sense? What I'm really telling you is when we think about investigating failure, we have to move from finding fault to finding understanding. So actively change. Go out and deliberately change how you investigate failure. Now, this sometimes looks like rewriting your accident investigation procedure. Dirty words, I know. We don't like saying accident investigation. Investigation has a lot of negative feelings around it, and I get that. I totally understand that. I'm right here with you. Maybe changing that from accident investigation to learning review or post-event response or something along those lines could be helpful, but changing the title of the document is not in and of itself enough. Like, that doesn't just do the trick. You can't have a shit procedure that moves people or process that moves people towards blame, shame, and retrain and stopping at human error and blaming Jason or whoever and just change the title to be something a little bit more cuddly and expect it to actually change things. Of course, we first have to change how we think about these things. Yeah, we have to change how we think about failure and investigating failure and learning from failure. But then we actually have to support that with process. So maybe a good question here as part of your action is, is this process, there we go, is this process, my post-event learning investigation something, is this moving us closer towards blame or closer towards learning? Something like that. It's a good maybe lens to think about that process procedure, your little book that tells people how to do this stuff when things go wrong. And I don't think that little book, that process, that procedure is bad. I think when things go wrong, it's probably pretty stinking good to have one of those, because especially when things go real wrong, we tend to panic and forget stuff. But having that guide that actually encourages people to seek to understand, even down to your form that can encourage people to seek to understand. Think about that accident investigation form. What does it look like? Does it move us towards person as the problem or person as the solution? Does it move us towards blame, or does it move us towards learning? A really good action here, another one, maybe for you, is if your form starts with, hey, did somebody mess up, a.k.a. did human error cause this event, a.k.a. did people follow the rules 100% of the time during this work evolution, a.k.a. did somebody mess up, that's probably not driving people towards actually seeking to understand. That's probably moving us towards blame. As we've discussed in previous episodes, another great example of that is if on the first page of your procedure, it says something about if you find that somebody messed up, examine for wrongdoing, examine their actions against the rules, and if you find that someone broke a rule, boom, guillotine, it is. Fired. It was tarred and feathered. Firing squad. I don't know. Insert something bad here. That basically means we're going to fire someone and blame shame them on their way out the door. That's probably where you're going to stop. So that gives you the answer to the question. Is this moving us towards blame or towards learning? But the action is you can actually go out and do something about that. You can rewrite that process. You can absolutely rewrite that process. You can retitle that process. You can rewrite that process. It was not handed down from up on high on stone tablets. Somebody wrote that. It is not gospel. It is a human that wrote that process, and maybe it sucks. You can do something about that. So go work on that. Number two, don't just invest your time into learning from failure. Actively seek out stories of normal, everyday, usually successful work. Go be deliberate, learn on purpose when things are going well. Yeah, so there's no hard and fast rule here, but I tend to share it like this, is that we're really, really, really good at learning post-event. Now, I didn't say that we're really, really great at it, and what I mean by we're really good at it is it happens. Yeah, low bar there, yeah, but it happens. Like, if you're listening to this podcast right now and shit hits the fan in your organization, you know, the phone rings and it's someone up in your organization says, hey, something that happened is over here. That's what it always sounded like to me, at least. You know what's going to happen next, don't you? Yeah. You're going to press pause. Yep. You know where I'm going with this. And you're going to navigate over, or if you're driving and listening to this, you're going to pull over and you're going to whip out your cell phone and you're going to go to www.delta.com. At least if you're like me, and you're going to find a flight tonight, right now, as close to right now as you can. They get you as close as you can to where said thing went wrong. As close as you can get to, that went wrong. Yeah. And you're going to go book a rental car. And maybe you're going to find a hotel room, or maybe you'll save that and see if you get lucky when you get there. But you're going to go, and you're going to go right now. Maybe you'll pick this podcast back up on the plane or on your drive. But you're going to go. You're going to drop everything, and you're going to go. That's what I mean, is that when things go wrong, we're really, 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 really good at clearing calendars, at making time, at pouring resources and people into said, into problem. We don't do that pre-event. And the crazy thing about that to me is that things almost always go right. Things at least go way more right than they go wrong. So we're missing tons of opportunities. Not only that, from like, we have a lot more to learn from things that go right than things that go wrong, because there's just a lot more things that go right. There's also this idea of that, you know, those things that went wrong. Yeah, sorry. I just excuse us to do that now. The things that went wrong lived in the world of things that went right, until they now live in the world of things that have gone wrong. Fate signals. Yeah, back to that conversation. Of course, we're back to that conversation. The stuff that has now gone, used to live in do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Things are going well. Pain point problem figuring out. Yep. This thing, the assembly on this piece of equipment sucks and it eats belts, but no one wants to listen, so we've just got to figure it out. It lived there until it moved over here. We're not doing ourselves any favors. You might feel like you're saving some time and budget, staying productive. By not learning pre-event, there's no free lunch. You're going to pay for it at some point. So what I encourage folks to do here, here's your action, is for at least, at the very least, as much as you learn post-event, you should invest at least, at a minimum, the same amount of time into learning pre-event. Yeah, and I don't think that's enough. I think it's maybe just a very low bar starting point. If I'm learning from 25 incidents a year, I should probably be, if those take 25 hours, and it's more than that, we know, I should be investing just as much time into pre-event, because why wouldn't I? I'm giving myself the opportunity to discover failure in motion and just maybe, reduce, eliminate, at very least maybe minimize outcome from those things that have gone wrong, because those things that have gone wrong didn't just magically go wrong. They were probably going wrong for a very long time. And by doing this, I have the opportunity to discover them while they're going wrong, rather than waiting until they've gone wrong and still waiting till somebody goes, yeah. We have to move from just learning from things that have hit the fan, shit that's hit the fan. Now, we also do a pretty okay, not as good as waiting for, but we do an okay job at learning from like, holy shit, that went really well, and that was cool. We do an okay job there. We could do better. But the place that we really need to pour our efforts into around being deliberate with learning is pre-event operational learning. How do you do that? You just go do it. Even when you don't know where to start. That's where Starting Points was born. Yeah, we've talked about this. I'm sure you've heard it a bunch through this episode. I've done a really bad job of telling people about Starting Points over the past couple of years since they've been out, and people kind of stumble onto them and go, why the hell are you not telling people about these? These are so wildly, insanely useful. I didn't know that my organization was using these until I found them in the field because an employee had bought them. They had seen them, and they think they kick ass, and I think they get you've probably heard about it at some point in this episode. I'm trying to remedy my suckiness at telling people about the goal things that we can help you with. But you can use something like Starting Points. You can just go ask a better question. You can go out, and even if there's no like, hey, this might be sucking over here, you can just go to like a process, something in a learning focused mindset, in a hey, teach me mindset, and ask a better question that encourages folks to teach you. You know, those things where you can just be like, hey, that's cool, show me how that works. That's pre-event operational learning. Yeah, it doesn't have to be some big formal learning team. Those are great. You can do that. When you hear those faint signals, like Jason and his crew would have been a good example. a prime opportunity to do a pre-event learning team. There was so much that came out of the post-event learning team, so much that was pretty readily available beforehand that it's likely. I can't say, you know, that it 100% would have. Embraced the gray. I forgot to add that in our disclaimer. Embraced the gray of all this. Yeah, yeah. So I've remedied that. But I can't say 100% because we're going to embrace the gray here, but there's a good chance that the stuff that Jason and his crew would have taught us pre-event, because we had all those faint signals and they were basically ignored because things were green and metrics were telling us that things were good. Even though Jason and his crew were basically saying, things are not good. We're going, but look, the metrics say it's green. So everything's great. There was a ton of opportunity beforehand that if we would have learned from Jason and his crew, learned with Jason and his crew and improved with Jason and his crew, Jason's piece of himself that found its way to that styrofoam cup would have likely stayed attached to Jason right where it belongs. Yeah. So go do pre-event operational learning, even if you don't know exactly where to start, even if you don't have defined scope, just go spend time with people and ask better questions and be curious and stay in not the knower mode, be in seeker mode, be in student mode, be in apprentice mode, be in teach me, show me mode. And when you do that, it'll surprise you. People will actually teach you stuff. Yeah, pretty stinking cool. Action number three. Now, for all of that to actually happen, the pre and the post-event learning actions that we've talked about, you actually have to make it safe to learn. You have to make it safe to tell the truth. Now, I spend time chatting with leaders about the importance of information within our organizations, and we've had a bit of that conversation so far, that as a leader, I really, 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 really need, like, it's top priority list of things that I need to be an effective leader. Without good information, it's hard for me to lead effectively because I am kind of leading a bit blind. I don't have good, solid, sound operational information to really make decisions with people. I can't I don't know how that works and say, yeah, I'm sure it's not a problem. The spreadsheet's telling me it's green. Back to our story time. The spreadsheet tells me it's green, so it's got to be green. If I'm not onboarding that information, accepting that information, if I don't have access to that information, it's really, really hard for me to make good decisions. Now, the thing that stands in our way of said information is a little thing that we call silence. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, a couple basic truths here, I think, with silence that we have to acknowledge. It's this. Silence is our neutral position as people. We know that silence is safe for us, at least in the immediate sense. If I don't open my mouth, I'm minimizing my risk of being made a fool. Yeah, of being made to be a jackass, of sticking my foot in my mouth, of saying something that ruffles feathers or offends or maybe gets me shamed or even fired in particular organizations, which leads us to our next kind of apparent truth here of silence within our organizations, within our lives, really. Is that people will only tell us what we allow them to tell us. Now, this is probably the more optimistic piece that I just shared with you. We already know that silence is our neutral position as people. And we also acknowledge, probably, if you're sitting here, that you can't just force someone out of silence. You can't just write a rule that says, hey, tell me stuff or I'll fire you. That backfires. And I know you got that rule, but I'm telling you, that rule doesn't make people tell you stuff. And you know that. You're here hanging out, talking about human and organization forms. We know that. You can't force people out of silence. But back to that second piece that we were just talking about. People will only tell you what you allow them to tell you. You can make it safe for them to tell you. You can make it possible for them to tell you. You can encourage them to tell you. And you can often draw them out of that silence on their own, but you can't beat them and kick them and tell me stuff or else your way out of that silence. But it starts, I believe that it starts with acknowledging those two kind of core fundamental things. And we could go on about silence for all day, and that's not my goal here. I just wanted to throw those in there. Because, to our point, you have to make it safe to learn. The preceding step to that is you have to make it safe to tell the truth. That has to do with some of the other principles we've been discussing. That will definitely have to do with that principle of how we respond matters, for sure. And several of the other ones, right? I mean, think about those. We don't have to go too deep into that to really understand what we mean there, is that if I really think like you're the problem and blame fixes stuff, and I think that melting down and panicking, reacting, pissing my pants rather than responding to information and events, I think that's a great thing. I'm making it the opposite of safe to tell me the truth. I'm telling you very clearly what you can and can't tell me. And people try this out on you. You know that because you try it out on people. I try it out on people. We do this as humans. I test you out, especially when I'm first getting to know you. And I stick my toe in the water and say, hey, here's something, leader, that might be a little scary, just a little bit, maybe a little inconvenient, maybe a little upsetting, and I see what you do with it. To that last human and organizational performance principle that we'll talk about, I'm not going to unpack it deeply here because we're going to get to that, but I see if you freak out, if you like Kool-Aid man through the wall and start firing people because of what I said, I see if you react or you respond. And that interaction, that lived experience, that really tells me very clearly if I can tell you the truth or not, or at least how much of the truth I can tell you. So that's the action. There it is. Use this stuff that we've been talking about. Focus on how we react, how we respond. Focus on creating that environment in which people can tell you the truth, and start by understanding that people can only tell you what you allow them to tell you. So there's a question in there. How much truth do I let people tell me? Yeah, how much truth does the organization genuinely, let me say that again, genuinely encourages people to tell it? Because there's a big difference between saying I have a rule that says that you got to tell me stuff and we love it when you tell me stuff, and then that in practice. I mean, you've lived that. You've been in those organizations. I've been in that organization where, you know, even something maybe even kind of minor, and you've already got anxiety because you're like, oh, say this, I'm going to get, oh my God, it's going to be terrible. I'm going to have to work for the next 72 hours straight because in the war, they're going to fire me. Yeah. Answer that question truthfully. Yeah. And if you land more on the side of it's kind of hard for people to tell us the truth, that's on us as the organization. How do we make it possible for people to tell us the truth, even when that truth is scary, even when that truth is migraine-inducing, even when that truth is inconvenient to the organization? How do we make that possible? And then, once we make it possible, how do we move that to being likely? And I think a lot of that has to do with those interactions that people have as they bring this information forward. So there you go. Action number three. Action number four. Lower the bar for learning opportunities. Learning activities, really, is the right way to say that. You know, not everything that has to do with learning has to be some big formal something. It doesn't need to be like a full-blown formal learning team. It doesn't. I mean, we mentioned that a lot in presentations and on this podcast. There's the we thing again. I mentioned that a ton, that's one of the problems that I see organizations facing with learning teams, is that they do a learning team in particular, and it works pretty well for them. Like, holy shit, that went good. And it was efficient, and people liked it, and I liked it, and we got good stuff out of it. They do another one. Same thing happens. They do another one. Third time's a charm. Now there's a rule somewhere that says we will do learning teams for everything. Always. Every time. Pre-event, post-event, stub your toe, learning team. Yeah. Shut the door too hard. Learning team. Safety cone placed in wrong container in the warehouse. Learning team. Team. Listen, I found the DJ air horn, and it took me hours. Well, 20 minutes. And I invested. That's a lot of time. I invested time into that. So you're going to hear it. And you're going to hear it a bunch, at least until I forget about it, probably after this episode. I don't know. We'll see. But what we call that is going learning team crazy. It sounds good in theory, but in practice, it really just devalues learning teams because we're not doing them where they matter. We're not doing them where they count. We're not doing them and where we should be doing them. And so we're not getting what we need to get out of them. That's just not how that works. I always encourage folks to ask themselves this question. Does it sound interesting? Does it sound learning rich? Does it seem like there's more here, that it's deeper? Are people telling you, people closest to the work telling you, like, we need to dig into this? You probably need to do something like a learning team. Do you have this, like, shared problem across the organization? Do you have like this big gaping something that everybody's dealing with, and on and on and on and on? Is this learning rich? Does this sound interesting? Those are places where you should be doing learning teams. You shouldn't be doing them for stub toes. I mean, really. Yeah, that's not a good use of your time, your resources. That's not a good use of a learning team. When you start doing learning teams, this highly effective, useful, practical way to learn and improve with those nearest to the work, when you start doing that everywhere, they start to become less valuable. Because people go, why are we doing this here? When you write a rule that says you got to do learning teams forever and always for everything. Oh, and we're so serious about this that we actually developed a spreadsheet, a dashboard. We've developed a dashboard. It's right over there in your Microsoft thing. What, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, it's in there. I built this myself. Yeah, it's got gauges on it, and it's got your departments on it. And if you're not doing enough learning teams, because we've decided that 17 learning teams a month is the magic number for pre and post event learning teams. If you're not doing those 17, that gauge starts to go to yellow and to red. And if it goes to red, then we're going to drill down, because I built that into that dashboard. So I can drill down and I can see that you are the person not doing your learning teams, and you are going to end up on the naughty list. And if you don't catch up on those 17 learning teams and turn that dashboard green, then your name is going on that naughty list, and it is going to your boss. If you don't fix it fast, it's going to your boss and your boss's boss. And it's going to go all the way up to the organization until we fire you for not being curious and learning. Garbage. Hot garbage. Be very careful to not go learning team crazy. The reason why I'm unpacking this and going down this path is to tell you that not everything needs to be a learning team. It doesn't. Not every way to operationally learn is scheduling meetings and dragging people into conference rooms and bringing in coffee. That's not it. It doesn't have to be that way. Those things are great when you use them in the right places. Not everything needs to be a full-blown accident investigation. I'm not going to put the horn in. I'm sorry. It doesn't have to be that. You can do this stuff informally as well, and you should be doing it more informally in the day-to-day. So lower the bar. That's the action. Lower the bar on these learning activities. Focus on operationally curious conversations. Whether you're using our awesome card decks or you're licensing in our awesome card decks or not, focus on those day-to-day conversations. Encourage folks to do that. Not just encourage them, but empower them to be operationally curious and learn. As we mentioned during a previous episode, make it possible. Not only make it make sense, because it kind of does make sense. That's not the hard part. The hard part is making it possible. If you want folks to go out and be curious and learn and do that more voluntarily and in a more informal fashion, it's usually not that people just don't want to do that stuff. No, it's usually because you're not giving them time to actually do it. It's usually because their day is already flat out slammed. It's usually because you already only pay them for 8 hours, but they're here for 12 because they're your leaders in particular have to catch up on all those stupid time cards that, the day got in the way of, and that happens every single day. It's that kind of stuff. If you want this stuff to actually happen, you have to make it possible for it to happen. And back to our point here about keeping it a bit informal, a lot of that can just be conversations. Encourage and make possible these operationally curious conversations. Encourage and make possible the ability for people to go learn from each other, to talk about pain points and problems and frustrations. Sometimes this is a less formal something. This could be, hey, we have a safety meeting this Monday. But instead of me getting up here and or Daryl, if you don't know who Daryl the safety man is, go look up Daryl the safety man. You should know if you've been hanging around here for a minute. If you don't have Daryl the safety man coming in and doing a 247-slide PowerPoint presentation on the importance of how you don and doff gloves, proper hand protection. Instead of doing that, we're all going to get together, and we're going to bring in the coffee, and we're going to do our safety meeting. We're going to call it a safety meeting, but we're not really going to do a safety meeting. We're going to hang out together, and we're going to focus on learning from each other. We're going to focus on talking about the things that are going right and the things that are going wrong and the areas where we need to learn. We're going to do that. We're going to take over that safety meeting. We're going to commandeer the safety meeting and turn it into a learning meeting. Yeah, that's a bit more formal, but that's not real formal, right? That's not super formal. You've already got those mechanisms in place. You've already got those meetings scheduled. People are already going to be there. Great use of your time. Another one, I was just having this conversation the other day. Since I haven't used the story time sound, and I could have used it about 14 times, let's just throw it into story time. Well, this isn't really story time. It's pretty close to it. Because I was in a meeting the other day, so yeah, I guess it is technically story time. Hold on. Kick your feet back. Get comfortable. Let me get some cold brew. You know these podcasts are long when I'm almost through the cold brew. I had a full one when we started it, and it's almost gone. But on to story time. I was in a meeting the other day, and we were unpacking this idea because this organization had an event. Yeah, an event. It wasn't a bad event. No one was maimed or killed or anything like that, but it was an event. It was a recordable event. And this organization is very new, very green to this journey. And every recordable event is still like, oh my God, it's the phone call we talked about in the plane and the rental car. Yeah, every recordable event. Sneeze, threw out your back. Went over and stubbed my toe, got over the counter ibuprofen at a prescription dose. The sky is falling. Hey, yeah, it's still kind of sort of that with this particular organization. They're trying and they're doing a lot of good work. And it's easy for us to kind of go, but we were there too. You were there too. And maybe you're there right now. Not a good place to be. Not fun. I know. I've been there. I lived a long time there. I know. But they're working on it. And now part of this is that they had the and irrecordable, and part of their corrective action plan, and maybe I need to say here as part of story time too, that this is one of those events, it's one of those recordable events, very similar to the, hey, I stubbed my toe and I got the over-the-counter ibuprofen at a prescription dose. This is one of those recordable events of like the mysterious, like I sit down in my chair wrong and I threw out my back. Yeah, I went there, they shot me full of morphine and sent me home. like one of those kind of stories. What I would call a non-preventable event. Yeah, back in the day, I think we were better at this. We would just call that an act of God. Yeah, like, I don't know. What do you want me to do? You got a bee sting. You want me to eradicate all bees on planet Earth. Yeah, it was one of those kind of things. And so they were at the end of their rope with stuff to do with this one. And so they landed right where we normally land when we are in that place in our organizational beliefs around safety and beyond. And we find ourselves at the end of our rope with a non-preventable recordable event. They did what any one of us would do. They were planning on doing a stand down. Okay, I'm avoiding the DJ horn now. I know you're probably annoyed at this point. And they were decided on a stand down. And I was spending time with them, and we were unpacking this idea of this stand down. You know, the problem was is that I'm going to say mid-level managers down through the organization and the entire, like, safety crew in this organization is like, bullshit. Yeah, but me and you are thinking, what we're thinking right now, what we're talking about, a stand down, really, like, look, this is what we would probably call, at least maybe 30, 40, 50 years ago, an act of God. And because this was an act of God, I don't know that there's much that we can do here. And pulling in employees into a room and talking at them for the next, 10 hours straight is just going to make them look at us like we're stupid because we're being stupid. Telling them to try harder, care more, all the above. And this would have never happened. And that's just not true. And everyone is pretty much agreed upon that, except for the people that wanted to make this happen. Now, unfortunately, the people that wanted to make this happen sit on like the highest floor of the organization and wore the fanciest shoes and slacks in the organization. The executive team, they're like, no, we are doing a stand down. You need to tell these people not to do this anymore. You need to go out and tell these people to not hurt themselves like that anymore. That'll work. I know that'll work because I'm the executive. We know the situation well. You've been there, and you've had to go do that stand down, just like I've had to go do that stand down. Now, the piece of advice that I shared here and action coming out of story time, and similar to our action of maybe commandeering that safety meeting if that's not working well for you, is this. When you get that stand down, what we did in the past when we still had those strong desires up in the organization to say, go do that thing, we would go do it. But there was no rule that said what I had to do. Yeah. They might say, talk about that event. And I would talk about that event. And that takes all of about 5 minutes out of that hour, 2 hour, all day stand down, whatever they're requiring you to do. I don't know about you. We had some. We never did this to ourselves. We would only do this to contractors for some reason, where we would do like multi-day, you're not working stand downs. Yeah, those kind of things. Those extras suck. Talk about, yeah. That's how your contractors start to view you as an asshole, because you're kind of being an asshole. Yeah, that's how that works. But we would take that thing over. I would talk about that event, and then we would shift that into operational learning. Yeah, hey, we're here. We got coffee. And I'm going to talk to you about this event. Everybody knows what happened. Yep, okay, we got that out of the way. Now let's do something cool. How can we learn about anything else? Is there anything to learn with this event? You tell me. If there's not, what should we be learning about? Well, what's the thing out there that seems to be really, really dangerous that the organization is just not paying enough attention to? Let's talk about that. Where's the next event going to happen? Tell me. Let's have that conversation, and we would turn it into that. So even you could start, you can even start with a bit of something that's like, don't let that ruin your day. Another really good example of that is our organization and several of the organizations I work for had a rule. A rule that says something along the lines of, if somebody gets hurt, you have to do a root cause. And look, I'm not going to just go bashing on root causes. I think there are a lot of good folks out there doing work in the root cause space and tuning that process more towards examining for context. And I think they probably have a place around certain things within our organizations. That's probably good. That's not always bad, right? I'm not just going to say like, those things are like the spawn of Satan, the devil, evil. I don't believe that. And you don't believe that either. Duh. Yeah, duh. Duh. But when we had to follow that rule, a lot of times what we would do, back this idea of taking things that you're already doing in your organization and then not being lazy, like doing the work and doing something different. There wasn't a rule that said we couldn't do learning teams. There was no rule that said that we could not go be curious and operationally learn in other ways. There was just a rule that said we had to do that. And we would do that. And we would even try hard at it. Or while somebody was doing that and trying real hard at it, we would go do a learning team. Yeah, or we would be in root cause stuff, and we would get down in a path where we're like, we just don't have the information for this. You know, we need to do some learning teams around this particular thing. Action, go do learning teams. There's a way. There's a way to move forward, even when you're stuck with some of that old stuff, even when you're stuck with that safety meeting, even when you're stuck with having to go do that stand down. It doesn't mean you have to do it. I'm throwing stuff now. It doesn't mean you have to do it the same old fashioned way that's probably not working well for you. In fact, I found with bringing HOP to life, operationalizing HOP, working internal to organizations, I'm going to say this in a way that sounds a lot harsher than what it is, but using their rules against them, yeah, that's a lot harsher than what I mean by that, but you get the point. Using those rules against the organization, using those mechanisms to do things differently, because there's already space carved out to do that root cause. There's already space carved out because they're demanding that stand down. There's already space carved out because there's a rule that says we have to do 47 safety meetings a month. It's there. Let's grab that stuff and do something different with it. I don't care that we're calling them safety meetings. I don't care that we're calling them root causes or stand downs. There's no rule that says I can't do things differently. Yeah, there you go. There's some action there around lowering the bar. A lot of it and story time. So story time's officially over. Tons of action packed into that little chunk that we just talked about there. The last one I want to share with you is this. Close the loop. Yeah. And aren't you curious? I frame this up as a principle, as an actionable principle, an actionable idea around operational curiosity of don't just talk, do. Yeah, don't just talk, do. Learning without action is maybe some really interesting conversation. And don't get me wrong here. I'm very much the person that will tell you to go out and learn for learning's sake. I think that sounded right. I think that's the point of operational learning. It's not learn and improve or else, it's learn. It's not learn, generate 47 corrective actions or you suck at learning. No, go out and focus on learning. Learn for the sake of learning. That goes back to lowering the bar for operational learning that we just mentioned, is that the bar for operational learning is learning. That's it. That's the goal. The goal of operational learning is learning. I didn't say fix stuff. I didn't say solve the world's problems. I didn't say generate 47 corrective actions that you take down to Kinko's. Is Kinko's still a thing? I think you take it to the UPS store now, right? Down to the UPS store and have put in that little spiral bound thing with a nice little clear cover sheet that you can turn into the executives and they go, ooh, oh, pictures, graphs, with like 100 corrective actions packed into that thing that all sound like stand down, safety meeting, tell people to try harder, tell people to try harder, lanyard cards, t-shirts. It's not that. That's not the goal. The goal is learning. Now, with that being said, will you almost always discover opportunities for improvement along the way? Yeah. But even if you don't, learning for the sake of learning is still learning. That's still enough. And the goal is learning. Again, back to lowering that barrier to entry to operational learning. If you encourage folks to go out and learn, even if you don't set some wacky expectation that you will fix everything, guess what people are going to do? They're more likely to go learn, and they're more likely to uncover areas that we need to improve, and they're more likely to work with those folks nearest to said work to improve said things. But with that out of the way, I want to bring it back to action. Yeah, because I think we're really good at, or as organizations, as leaders, as people. It's just part of who we are, I think. We're really good at talking the talk and not walking the walk. We're really good at going out and learning and maybe discovering a lot of good opportunities for improvement and maybe even coming up with some really great ideas for improvement with the folks nearest to the work and then doing absolutely nothing. And nothing will kill your efforts around learning faster than doing nothing when you should be doing something. Yeah, you let those ideas sit on the shelf. You let that information and ideas sit on the shelf, wither and die and crumple into dust and blow off into the wind. Now, don't get me wrong here. I think that some ideas are not worth pursuing. Yeah, another common misconception I think that happens with learning teams in particular and operational learning overall, whether it's just operationally curious conversations or learning teams, is that every idea that comes from the front line is a good idea. That is not true. Sometimes you will uncover some really, really bad ideas. Sometimes you will discover that once you combine the operational reality that you discover at the sharp end of your organization with that other piece of information that sits higher in your organization, you know, operational vision and that kind of piece of resources and mission and all that stuff that usually lives a little bit higher in our organization. When you bring those two different sets of information together, you sometimes realize like that's a bad idea, or like genuinely, we can't do that right now. We can do this, but we can't do that. Now, when we discover that though, what happens is we take that as a sign of no action needed. And that's not true. Here's an action around no action. You ready for it? This is going to be a mouthful. An action when you choose to take no action. It's not that there's no action. It's that there's a different set of actions you must take when you choose to take no action. I hope that made sense because it's a mouthful. What I mean by that is that even if you choose to not do something, and to not do something for really, really good reasons, and choosing to not do something because it's a bad idea or for really, really good reasons is probably the right move, when you go down that path of choosing no action around something, there is still action, and that action is explanation. You owe people an explanation. You owe people a damn good explanation as to why we're not moving down that path. The one thing you can't do here is take no action. There's always action. There's always some form of action that you must take. In this particular case, it is giving people that damn good explanation, making it make sense. Here's why we're not going down that path. Here's all the good reasons. Or it's a great idea, but we can't do it right now. We're going to do it later. Or we are moving down this set of actions. We are moving forward with your ideas. And here's how we're going to do that. Here's the resources and time and all of those things that you need. As another piece of this, another action for you, is that a lot of times that means letting people run with their own ideas. As a leader, sometimes that means giving them resources and time and getting the heck out of their way, letting them experiment and letting them figure it out. But the last action of our action-oriented mini-series here around and on this particular episode of Learning is Vital, now what, is take action. Like, do something with the stuff that you learn. You've got to close that loop. When we learn something important and we come up with those ideas for improvement with those folks nearest to that work, we have to translate that into meaningful change within our organizations. And as we said, whether we take action or no action with that thing, and, you know, maybe we're taking no action for good reasons, crucially, we have to communicate back to those folks and to the organization overall, to the workforce, what we've learned and what we're doing about it, or what we're not doing about it and why. This really shows people, closing this loop shows people that their information, their ideas, their know-how, or their input is not only valuable, but we actually value it. Yeah. So there you go. There's a bunch of actionable things around learning is vital. Now what? Let's do our little bit of a recap here. Okay, we're going to make this one quick because we're an hour and 20 into this one, and I don't think that's a mistake. This is a big one for us. Yeah, it's huge. Making learning deliberate, valuing both pre- and post-event operational learning within our organization is a big stinking deal, and we truly have to value it. If we say that we value it, but we don't back it up with time and resources and people and the ability to actually go do this, we don't actually value it. But on to our actions. Again, quick recap here. Not only changing, number one, numero uno, not only changing how we think about investigating failure, but actually changing how we investigate failure. The next one is learning pre-event, actively seeking out stories of normal work and baking that into our day today. The other one is making it actually safe to learn. People can only tell you what you allow them to tell you. Creating an environment where people can not only tell you, the leader, the truth, but tell the organization operational truth, inconvenient operational truth, scary operational truth sometimes. The next one we talked about was lowering the bar for learning. That not everything has to be some big formal something. Not everything needs to be a learning scene. We talked about that a lot. I've vented maybe a little bit about that one in particular. Make it easy to learn. A way to do that, as we started to unpack in our last action even, was that make learning about learning. Don't make operational learning about going out and creating a bunch of actions. Learn for the sake of learning, and you'll find those actions where you need to find those actions. Keeping it informal, or at least giving people an informal mechanism where that makes sense, and reserving those more formal methods for where they count. And the last piece that we talked about was closing the loop, taking action on the information and ideas that you discover with those people nearest to the work. And even when we discover that those ideas aren't very good ideas, and maybe we shouldn't pursue those ideas, because that is a real thing that happens. Not learning teams, operational learning, it's not the goose that shits golden eggs. Every now and again, you're going to get a regular egg. Every now and again, you're not going to get an egg. Every now and again, that brown egg is not a brown egg. It's something else. Yep. You're going to find that. When you do find that you shouldn't take action on particular ideas, that doesn't mean no action. It means a different set of action. It means making it make sense to the organization, to the people involved, as to why we're not taking those actions, why it makes good sense to not act upon that information and those ideas. So there you have it, folks. That's it. That's episode number 4. Yeah, number 4, I believe. Learning is vital. What now? I think we answered a good amount of that question, at least a good chunk of ideas for action within your organization. These deliberate actions that we can take to embed operational curiosity and learning into the fabric of our operations. That's a fancy way of saying it, huh? These things that truly make a bit of difference. Start small, be curious, make it safe, focus on understanding how work really gets done, how people really create success in the organization. Yep, that's how you do really, 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 really cool things within your organization. Until next time, it is Sam Goodman getting ready to sign off. I'm going to tell you one last time to head over to www.thehopner.com. Check out the services that we've got. Check out the free resources. In case you don't know this, you can download all those wacky videos that I make on LinkedIn. And if you don't know what the heck I'm talking about, you should go follow me on LinkedIn. It's just Sam Goodman. Yeah, I make all kinds of funnies. And you can download them and you can use them. That's what they're there for. Under that free resources section, there's all kinds of guides and quick sheets and things that you can use. Yeah, just downloadable stuff. Cool, cool things. You can listen to this podcast there. There's a merch store. And most important of all, I think, to share with you, because I do a really, really bad job at it, is check out Starting Points. You just click Starting Points right at the top or go to thehotnerd.com/SP. Until next time, it is Sam Goodman signing off. See you next week to do more of this what now question. Love you. Mean it. Bye, everybody. Bye. For listening, everybody. We greatly appreciate all of your support of the Hot Nerd Podcast and the Hot Nerd LLC. If you need a little bit of help of bringing human and organizational performance to life, if you would like to take your efforts around learning and improving to the next level, yep, I can help with that. Head over to www.thehotnerd.com or send me an email, thehotnerd@gmail.com. Until next time, bye, everybody. Bye. Are you looking for a handy-dandy, easy-peasy, lemon-squeezy kind of way to get conversations flowing around operational reality within your organization? These conversations around work is done versus work is imagined, pain points, problems, even best practices, the good stuff, the great stuff. Well, Starting Points is exactly what you're looking for. Starting Points, the original operationally curious card deck, packed full of a ton of learning-focused, operationally curious icebreaker questions to get those conversations flowing, helping your organization to effectively learn, improve, and innovate. Head over to thehotnerd.com/SP to download our free sample deck, to purchase the original card decks and learning journals, or to inquire about licensing options so that you can customize Starting Points with your brand, your logo, and your questions for your specific organization's needs. Again, that's thehotnerd.com/SP. Back to the show.